Hey, good morning. Today is Thursday, June 18th, 2008. My name is Allison Page. I'm with
Actually, I think it's the 19th today.
the 19th. Okay. My name is Allison Page. I'm with the UW Oral History Program, and this morning I will be interviewing Lee Jovic with the U.S. Forest Products Lab for their Centennial Oral History Project. Mr. Jovic, if you want to start just by talking about where you were born, when, and some of your early background, maybe your education as well.
All right. I was born in a little town in northern Minnesota by the name of Strathcona. And I was born in 1931, so that makes me, I think, 77. I went to high school in Greenbush, Minnesota. And out of high school, I went in the Air Force for 4 years. And then went to the University of Minnesota and got my master's degree there in 1961.
And
And there I was. Go ahead.
what was your master's in?
Wood science and technology.
Okay. If you want to continue, sorry about that.
That's right. There was a long spell, probably 20 years, with the laboratory, Forest Products Laboratory. I'll refer to it as laboratory only, but which they had not hired basically anybody because during World War II, there was a big buildup of for the military effort here in Madison. The Forest Products Lab had over 700, probably close to 750 employees at that time. So from end of World War II to the Korean War, they basically had been trying to reduce their staff without having layoffs. So they had not hired anybody for many, many years, probably 20 years. And when I was surprised when I put an application in that I was hired. So I came to work August 1961 and was hired into a wood preservation research project. And that's, I guess, the beginning of my life here at Forest Products Lab. I've been now retired since 1989.
Okay, and how did you learn about the Forest Products Lab? Was that something that you picked up while you were in school or some other means?
Oh yes, it was everybody's dream was to graduate in wood science technology at the University of Minnesota and come to work at a federal lab, the Madison Lab, and everybody knew about it. But they also knew that they hadn't hired anybody for many years, so we didn't really think we would be able to get in. It worked, and it was a fun ride.
Okay, what were your initial impressions of the lab? I know you said that it was kind of everybody's dream to work there, but more personally, how did you feel about the lab itself?
Oh, it was a great place to work, of course, and being right next to the great University of Wisconsin was a plus because we could go and take courses there very inexpensively. So it was a good marriage between the laboratory and the university, and I would teach short courses over there a lot all through my career.
Do you have any memories or first impressions of the first couple days on the job here in 1961, or the first year or so working with individual people or projects?
Well, I guess the age and the ones that had, had been there. So that was it always was that big gap in there, about 20 years, which there was no young kids that were added to the staff. I had the boss, Dr. Beckler, hired me, a great man, very knowledgeable and very unselfish. He taught me so much about wood products and wood preservation research. We had a great time. It was, I was kind of sad when Friday come around and we couldn't, come back to work. That's the way it was.
So when you first started working here, you started in a wood preservation project, is that correct?
That's right.
Could you say a little bit more about that, the type of work that you did, or the who did you work with and in what capacity?
Well, the wood preservation project work unit included paints, finishing, wood finishing. It included a chemistry of wood preservatives and a treatment of wood, as well as, the gluing project was also in there. Mm-hmm. It was a big division, wood preservation division. Probably hired, I imagine there must have been 50 to 60 employees in it.
Okay. Could you maybe describe what a typical day at the Forest Products Lab was like? Maybe who you worked with on a day-to-day basis and the special projects that you worked on or ones that were most memorable?
Well, it was, our lab was open to the public. We had a lot of the visitors coming in seeking information, so I would spend a lot of time with visitors coming in the front door and they'd want to know something about they were having trouble getting some wood treated or they had probably some species identification they needed done. Something, always something different going on. And I had three, technicians working under me. One man was excellent. He was one of the older people, and his name was Harley Davidson, of all things. Harley Davidson was his real name.
Oh, wow.
Great guy. And he run the, we had a full-blown treating plant back there. We could treat wood just like a commercial company could, treat the wood. So he run the plant back there and was just a super, super technician. And I had several others, a chemist that did the chemical analysis for us, and the typical day was it was a surprise because you never knew what was going to happen, and we would work from we start 8 to 5 in the afternoon, but many times we didn't go home until 8 o'clock at night because you had stuff going and you couldn't stop it. You never thought about the quitting time. You just worked until your job was done.
I know you mentioned a couple times about being so young when you started at the lab. Did that ever create any problems, or was that not really an issue?
No, I think it hasn't created any problems. I think it was a welcome from from the people that had been there, you know, because there were some new young guys that they could, you know, if they were the crew that was there when I was hired were, like I say, they were about 20 years older than me, and they would say, you know, they really, you know, would take me under the wing and help me along. The, you know, always you have a problem with something and a reaction didn't work the way you thought it should, you always go up and find somebody and say, oh, well, try this or try this. Or, it was just a fun place.
So did you get to work quite a bit with other divisions then on a regular basis?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, we'd work with the engineering group, you know, when we would treat a species of wood with a chemical, we were, you know, concerned that had we done anything to damage the integrity of the piece of wood, does it get weaker because we treated it? So, yes, we worked with a lot of different disciplines all over the lab. And we would have, certainly had to work with the wood identification group, which we'd get stuff in that we didn't know what it was. You know, we had to take it up there and have them identify it.
You worked quite a bit with other departments then within the lab. Did your work ever take you outside of the office?
Yes, it did a lot. Yeah. I traveled, oh, after I'd been there probably 10 years, I would, well, I think I was in the field, you know, traveling probably half the time.
What places did you go and what kind of work did you do?
Well, we were a wood preservation, you know, work unit, and as such, we were members of the American Wood Preservers Association, which was a industry and the university, you know, members group of setting standards for the treatment of wood with preservatives. So I was on standards committee for, probably 20, 25 years about my time there. So that, you know, I travel a lot to committee meetings and to conventions of the association, published a lot of papers. I belonged to the Forest Products Research Society, which is like right next door to the lab, you know. A member of that group for a long time, published a lot of papers in their journal. And as the we had treated wood specimens for evaluation in various areas of the country, test sites from Maine to Washington State and Mississippi and Minnesota, had test spots in the ground. We would treat the stakes 2x4 or 3/4 inch stakes about 18 inches long, treat them with various preservatives at different, you know, loadings or retentions, we call it, and install them in field test plots, and then we'd have to go back and inspect them once a year. And that saved a lot of travel. So, and it was the test results from the field test that went into standards so that when they were treating a fence post for a farmer or treating a piling for industrial building, they would know what preservatives they should use and what retention they should put in there. That was the fun part of it, was seeing if your research got used.
Is there one particular project, either through your travels or at the lab itself, that stands out from your memories?
you know, I've to this point, I've told you how, what a great place it was to work, but, you know, it's not, doesn't always work that well. And I think the biggest headache I had, which was a dealing with a preservative called Celon. It was invented by a company called Copper out in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and they would dissolve the biocide in LP gas, liquid petroleum gas, which is the kind of thing you have, you know, in a tank, you know, for you can, you know, have for a you know, cooking on. Anyway, they had a device. They put the biocide in this LP gas, treat the wood, and when the wood came out of the cylinder after treatment, it looked like it had never been treated. And the way it performed in the field, I kind of think it probably had never been treated, because you couldn't see any evidence that it had been treated. And it was a big headache to us, because we could see the Celon treatment failing all around us, and the company just kept, you know, pouring more money into it and continuing to do it. A lot of people lost a lot of money, invested in it, lost money. But and I'd say, if I was to pick out one bad thing that I was involved in, and that would be Celon. It was a disaster and headache to me, and I would have to deal with the copper company people. They were trying to convince me that this was a great process, and our test didn't show it. So it was always a trial to me. And it's, I guess if you only have one thing in 30 years that bothers you, that ain't too bad. You have to realize that the lab is a federal lab, and as such, our main purpose is to make sure that the people of the United States get a fair deal when they buy treated wood. We weren't there to help a company get rich. We were trying to get people that were buying treated wood to get what they thought they were getting.
So were you incredibly frustrated then that this treatment wasn't
that was one thing that was frustrating to me. I didn't like the idea that they, you know, it was obvious it wasn't going to work, and you know, all our tests showed it wasn't going to work. Well, let me just give you kind of a sad scenario to this thing, a real, real problem. I said we would treat, you know, 2x4 stakes and, you know, and 3/4-inch stakes, put them in the ground, and we'd had the Celon treatment. It's a special treatment, so we had to go to Orville, Ohio, and be on hand when they treated our wood. We put in fence posts and 2x4 stakes and sapling stakes. We had them all treated to our demand, our type of the retention we wanted. So we were there on the site when they were treated, made sure it was done, and when it was completed, they were bundled, put on a train, and shipped down to Gulfport, Mississippi. So here we had round fence posts, 2x4 stakes, and sapling stakes in our test. Well, as you can imagine, the small stakes were starting to show up pretty bad decay in about 18 months, 2 years. 2x4s are showing attack 2 years to 3 years, serious attack. And the controls were just, you know, they weren't, they, you know, were just about, the untreated ones were just about as good as the treated ones. the name of Ralph Mesher, the copper company. He was vice president. He was supposed to be the guy that invented this thing. He came on and said that, well, the reason you're having trouble down there in is because this Talon treatment was meant for round stock poles, and it couldn't work in Talon material. Well, he forgot that we also had fence poles in there, which is a round pole, just like a small pole. And he told me that, you know, well, we'll just ignore those things because it's not meant for sawn material. I said, well, that's okay, Ralph. Yeah, we got the fence post in, and they should show up now in about a year. Well, all of a sudden, we got the lad got three top belt basher and President Hopper came into the lab, met with our director, and demanded that the fence post be removed from our test site. And I didn't know a thing about it until I got word from our people down there in Mississippi that, hey, they're coming here, copper truck is here, loading up your fence post on your plot. You want to go? And I said, hell no. So I start checking around, and our director, unbeknown to me, had approved they could go in and take their fence poles out. Well, there goes our data. So they continued to keep on treating that Dallon, which is a lick and a promise, and a lot of people, many coppers, they paid to the nose trying to make it work. They replaced, I don't know how many thousand poles that didn't work. And we could have saved them a lot of money if they shut it off in the past, but they didn't. And our director was part of it at that time. Ed Locke, if you want to know his name.
Okay. So this treatment actually went on the market then?
Oh, yes. Not to our liking. We could see it was a problem. But, you know, they called the company the Big K. You know, they ruled the roost. But they didn't rule me or the Forest Products Lab. At least, I guess they you can say they had a hold of the director. But I had some bad times with them. But that was, you know, I guess some of the challenges we go through in life.
So was that a fairly common thing to be kind of butting heads with the industry when you were working with them, or was that just a special case?
That was a special case. Most of the industry people, they would come to see us and see, what do you think of this idea? You think it'll work? And we'd say, well, let's put some in test, and we can give you the answer in, you know, probably 2 years. Or if they come in, it was always people coming in with a sack full of tricks. Oh, they got the best thing in the world, you know. And 90% of the time, you could throw it off because their idea was flawed, you know. You know, one thing with working, you know, and having your head on straight and understanding a little bit about wood and how it reacts to chemicals, you can, you know, hit it off real easy because knowledge and you're knowing what wood is like and how you handle it, it helps. And that's what we were good at. The advice they get from them was always free. There was no charge for it.
Okay. So we talked a little bit about the actual work that you did. Let's maybe switch gears, and if you could say a little bit about some of the colleagues that you worked with, strong memories or thoughts about the people that you worked with on a day-to-day basis, and anything that you want to say maybe about the administration working with the higher levels of the Forest Products Lab?
The guy headed up the paint project was John Black, and excellent guy on paint matters. He knew everything. And we had a adhesive or gluing section. Vern Soper was the one of the top technicians in there, and when you had a problem with gluing, see, sometimes we would get laminated, piece of wood glued together like a laminated beam, and we put it in the treating cylinder, put high pressure on it, and it would start to delaminate. Well, that's when we go and talk to the glue people, and turned out they didn't use a waterproof glue, so it just dissolved in the cylinder. I became a project leader after about 5 years, I believe, maybe 6 years. And so I had, I think, about 13 people working under me for quite a while. And then the lab started downsizing, so they put a number of projects together into bigger work units. So, like I say, we had around 450 or 460 people when I started work there. And now I think they have to shake the trees pretty good to find 100. So it downsized a lot, and it was downsizing in my later years. And so I had great people to work with all through my career there. If I don't say it, somebody else might. I had a project leader one time. His name was Rodney DeGroote, which was a bit of a challenge. But
how come?
You want me to muddy the water?
It's up to you.
Yeah, I don't care. You can when you put this, will I get a chance to look it over?
Yes, you will.
Okay. Well, I'll just that everything just runs smoothly all the time. You know that. And anyway, this is Rodney DeGroote, was my project leader, and I wasn't getting along good with him. I thought, well, I better make an effort. So I said, Rodney, why don't we go together and do a study together? I thought that might be a good way to break the ice and so we could understand each other. So I said, I'll write up the study plan and I'll get get the work going. And I was, working on the project, and I thought, well, damn, he's the co-author on the study plan. I had a point in the study where I had a couple ways to go with it. And I thought, well, I'll leave it up to him to decide. I didn't care which way, but we had to make a decision to do it one way or another. So I went to his office, and I said, look, I'm at this point in the study, and we can go one of two ways. You tell me which way you want to go. You can make a decision. Well, he started talking. I called him a guy, a champion of double talk. Talk like gangbusters and say nothing. And, he started talking all across the whole gamut of things with the study, back and forth, and I was sitting there, and he never, I asked him a simple question, we got two ways to lot. I said, right there. You say, A or B, which way you want to go? He got so mad, he stopped, got out of his chair, and the Lord just rolled across the office and slammed into the wall, and he walked out. I was in his office. He stormed out. And I said, I sat there for a while, alone in his office. And the secretary, she heard that chair slam into the wall, so she came in to see if I was all right. She's seen Rod leave. And I would sit there and I said, well, I guess I better go. I guess I'm not going to get an answer today. And that was, I guess, the thing that I still thought it was humorous, but he could not make a decision. That's what I learned that day. He could not make a decision. So if he thought he would be wrong, I guess it would bother him too much, you know. I've made lots of decisions that were wrong. Made lots of right. But he couldn't bite the bullets and say, let's do it this way. He didn't. He thought he might be wrong and he couldn't stand it. But anyway, that's my story. It's well, not X-rated.
He sounds like a very interesting person to work with. Were there other kind of colorful characters at the lab that you worked with?
Oh, yeah.
Good or bad?
we had some of them. The guy that worked the stock room, his name was Jim Grady. And he always had a story. Always had a story. And we, you know, to get our things we needed, like chemicals, go through the window and we just sign a slip and he'd get it for us. So he run the stock room, but he always leave there chuckling because he'd tell you something. That was really made your day to lighten up your. You may be real serious about something, and he could make a joke out of it. But those are fun days. We had a in those days a men's club. You could do that. This was before women's lib, I guess. You couldn't do it now because you have to have it's a employee club or something now. But we had a men's club. And once a year we'd have the big bash. And as men would do, it could get raunchy. Looking back at it, it was a crazy time. But we, like I say, we played hard and worked hard. And the lab was a place that everybody recognized. I don't think there's a wood person in the whole United States would not have loved to work at the Forest Products Lab. It's a mecca. It's a mecca of wood research.
What kind of things did the men's club do exactly? Could you say a little bit more about that? And were there other activities available to you at the lab that you did?
Yeah, we had all lab picnics, of course. And they were, everybody attended, families, everybody come to those. It was good times. Men's club, we had golf outings and things of that nature. That was always activity. We had a softball league, baseball, lots of things going on.
Do you have any particular memories of some of these activities that stand out in your mind?
I can't bring any, the mind that I can put in print. No, it was a different time, you have to realize this back in, 60s, 70s, 50s, 60s, 70s, yeah. time than today. There's no no men's club anymore. There's a forced product club that includes everybody. So. I told you, I did travel a lot, and I have a certificate sticker from Northwest Airlines. I'm a 2 million mile club member in the air.
Wow.
So that was the, they kept track of the miles you fly. And when I got that, I got a whole package of goodies. I got a CD player, a new attaché case, a whole bunch of things that they give, for flying with them so much. Of course, Northwest was the main carrier for the area, and I was always ticketed on Northwest when I was flying somewhere. So, I did travel a lot in those days. Every week I'd be gone somewhere.
And was that kind of a highlight for you, or?
The traveling?
Yeah.
It was necessary. No, it got long. I have two boys. Of course, they kind of had to be raised by their mother. But I was always home on weekends, so. I was traveling a lot. It's what you pay for what you want to do. I would do it over again. Are you still there?
Oh, yes.
Oh. My phone is beeping. Somebody's trying to call me, I guess. That's okay.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess maybe to switch gears a little bit, I have a couple questions about how you, you had mentioned earlier teaching some classes at the University of Wisconsin. Is that correct?
Yeah.
These
were short courses that you come in there for, give a 2 or 3 hour lecture on wood preservatives. So they had. Invite, it was kind of a extension program for people coming back and more about the uses of wood. So I did that for about 15 years. A couple times a year they'd have people come in.
How did the Forest Products Lab feel about that kind of relationship with the university? Was that something they kind of fostered and encouraged, or no?
Oh, absolutely, yes. And I think the feeling was both ways. The university, they have students that would come over and they could do their projects at the lab. If it's testing wood or treating wood, yes. It was a good relationship between the university and the lab. And going back a little earlier, and up until 1929, the Forest Products Laboratory was on campus. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Right over by the railroad track, near the mechanics lab.
Oh, okay.
The building's still there.
Is that the old engineering building, or?
Right there where the tracks cross Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
It's right there.
Oh, okay.
Not a big building. That's where you were until 1929 when they built the one they're in now. Of course, they got a big building program going on there right now, as you know.
Yeah.
And they don't have people to put in the buildings. I don't know how. This is one of the strange things their goats, maybe. I don't know.
Well, kind of talking about the federal government, how did you feel about working for an agency that's part of the USDA Forest Service and the federal government?
It was great. I'm talking in my day. I can't talk too much about today, but in my day, yes, it was a great idea to have a centralized place to do wood research. There's satellite places all around the country that do special things on wood research, but the one place that all things are done to wood at the U.S. Forest Products Lab in Madison. But there's stations in Washington and down in Gulfport, Mississippi, and Boston, all places. There are satellite regional labs, okay, that do specialty work for wood products for that specific area. But the lab is the granddaddy where all the work would come from.
So would you say that your impressions of the Forest Service and Forest Products Lab have remained pretty much the same, or have they changed over time?
Well, it's kind of hard to answer that without stepping on somebody's toes. I think it has stayed pretty much the same, but you have to understand that there's a money crunch going on out, and it's hard to keep a lab, going with many people as we had at this day and age when the funds are hard to come by. So I can understand the frustration going on in, trying to keep their, heads above water and get the appropriations for running the lab. So the director today is a nice guy. He's a good man. But it's got to be a concern to him.
Were budgets an issue when you were still at the lab, or not really?
No. I didn't have to worry about that too much. That was not my job. But no, if you had a project and wrote the thing up, it was fun. It'd be always fun for it. So that was the nice thing about it. If the project required some travel, there was always money for travel. Everything was there. So yeah, it was. I got. Just not the fond memories of my days at the lab. It was fun. I waited for Monday to come to go back to work.
Okay. Well, I guess we can move into sort of the end of your career and your retirement time. When and why did you retire from Forest Products Lab? And do you feel that your work has left a mark on the Forest Products Lab or USDA in general?
To answer your last first, yes. That work I've done there has made a difference. The publications are still surfacing around the world. And I when I retired, I had, with my military time, I had 30 years in service, and I guess for one thing, the traveling like I did for my job was a strain on the family. And I thought that, I'll take my retirement and do something different. So I retired This is something just, you know, for your information. I've been thinking about it for a couple of weeks. You know, my 30 years are coming up in 1989, and I thought, should I, shouldn't I? So I went up to personnel and filled out my papers for retirement. They were just as surprised as I was, I guess. What are you, you know, why are you doing? I said, it just seemed to be time, you know, but somebody else carried the load for a while. And so I called my wife that afternoon, and I said, by the way, you don't have to fix a lunch for me tomorrow because I'm retiring today. She said, what? I said, yeah, I'm done. So I won't have to have a lunch tomorrow. So that's how she knew about it.
So it was kind of a spur of the moment thing, or was there something that triggered that?
Well, I mentioned this guy, DeGroot. Okay, he was my project leader, and it was every day was a confrontation of some sort or other. You know, he didn't like me, and I didn't like him, I guess. And that was one thing. I thought, I don't need this stress. And I had always thought I could hang out my shingle and do a little bit of consulting, you know, because I was, you know, I consider myself very knowledgeable in wood preservation and product work like this. So I thought, well, I'll just make up some business cards and send a few flyers out that, yeah, as of that today, I'm going to be doing some consulting. Well, there's no such thing as a little bit of consulting, I find out. I was busier then for about 10 years than I ever was at the lab. You know, it was just, I had to put a blackboard up in my office, in my one of the bedrooms. I changed into office. I put a blackboard up there. Just keep track of the court cases that were coming up and the depositions I had to be at. So it was kind of a crazy time there for 10 years or more. And I remember my dad told me, he said, you know, there's two ways to tell somebody no when they want some help. One is just a flat say no. And the other thing is charge so much money they can't afford you. Well, I can tell you, the second one doesn't work. Just charging too much is not an option because I was charging $300 an hour and it still didn't slow down the work. Now you know a little bit of my personal side.
Well, in general, do you feel that you accomplished everything that you set out to accomplish career-wise? And did the Forest Products Lab help you with that?
Yes, I did. You know, you never really... You always got projects going, and you say, well, when I get done with this one, it'll be a good time to hang it up. Well, while you're working on that, when you start another one, and then another one, and so you got three going at the same time, and they never have the same end point to them. So it was just, you just had to say, well, somebody else can finish it. But the lab is going on before I got here, and it'll go on after I leave here. That's about the philosophy you have to have.
Well, that's kind of the end of my questions, unless you have any other stories, memories, or comments about the forest products that you would wish to record for posterity before we go.
I think you probably heard all mine now. anything else be X-rated.